call the meeting of the Energy Environment together and open the hearing on Senate Bill 237. We have about 16 witnesses signed up. The meeting is scheduled to go from 7 till 9 p.m. We're going to try to hold to that. We're going to take people from out of town as much as we can first. We'd like to have you limit your testimony. If you have something to say that's already been said before, we'd like to have you try to shorten it up. And if you have testimony that's prepared, we'd like to have you hand that into the committee as well. We'd like to start out our old friend here, who signed up first, is a very familiar name, Jim Allison. Clerk, note those present and all others excused.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Jim Allison, and I'm president of the Washington County Landowners Association, and I have worked today on preparing a testimony, and in front of me and in front of you are a couple of maps that I will be referring to in my testimony. While the motivation behind Senate Bill 237 may be worthy of praise, the bill is still seriously flawed. Any attempt by this legislature to require LCDC to recognize and treat marginal farmland differently from prime farmland is commendable. However, unless a workable bill is passed, the results may be similar to the infamous lot of record measure adopted in the dying moments of the 1981 session. Senate Bill 237 is sent to you by the Senate may help some owners of small, unbuilt upon lots of record on marginal land. However, it is important that all understand that as drafted, the bill makes it much worse than current law for others. To understand precisely the problems with the bill, it is essential that one try to apply it to the ground. To this end, I purchased two tax lot maps from Washington County. I believe the problems I am prepared to demonstrate exist in many other counties. Let us examine some possible applications of the bill. Map number one is in northern Washington County along Highway 47. This map has a scale of 1 inch equals 1,000 feet. Area A, colored yellow, qualifies as marginal land geographic area under the present language of the bill. It consists of 23 contiguous lots, none of which exceed 20 acres in size, one lot of 21 acres, and one of 134.69 acres. The total area is 3,316 plus acres. 50.5% consists of lots under 20 acres in size. In determining the acreage, I used the figures on the tax lot map, which may not be the same as the meets and bounds description. The bill doesn't specify which figures are to be used. I'm familiar with the area, and I do not believe that any tax lot made a, quote, significant contribution to a farm operation that produced $20,000 or more in gross income in 3 of the 5 years preceding the effective date of this act, unquote. I do not know how the planning director will prove this to the satisfaction of the 1,000 Friends of Oregon. Is it the intent of the sponsors of this measure that some bureaucrat interview all of the owners? Does the legislature intend that we are to consider the 5 calendar years from 78 through 1982, or do the 5 years begin 5 years back from the effective date? What is done in the case of an owner whose records are on a fiscal year basis? A better solution is to draft a definition of marginal land that doesn't require the planning director to ask 25 owners how much they grossed during the last 5 years and then determine if that is a, quote, significant contribution, unquote. What does he do when the current owner says, I bought the land from Joe Doakes in 1982, and I don't have any idea how much Doakes received in the past, and he doesn't even know where Doakes is. Please refer to Area A on Map 1. Under current language in the bill, the owner of Tax Lot 4802, outlined in red, has an unbuildable lot as long as it remains in the proposed marginal land zone. Why? Because it was lawfully created after January 1, 1978. Under current language, the owners of Tax Lot 5800 can create 6 lots. Each will be buildable. I fail to see the logic of a new state-created zone which says that a parcel lawfully created between January 1, 1978 and the effective date of this act is unbuildable simply because it is less than 20 acres in size. If the land is marginal, then all lawfully created lots should be buildable. Remember in the past when someone has been denied the right to build a home on his land, the planners have been able to say, quote, LCDC made us do it. If this bill becomes law and homes are denied people who own lawfully created lots of record in either the marginal land zone or the more restrictive EFU zone created by this measure, they won't be able to blame LCDC. The planners will say, quote, we are merely complying with state law. If you don't like this new law, then go talk to your senator or representative who passed it. They are the ones who are requiring us to deny your building permit. Don't blame us. We are merely following the law. Please refer to Area B on Map 1. It consists of seven small lots and demonstrates another defect in the bill. Believe me, this is marginal land. But this 52.62-acre area cannot qualify because it does not meet the 100-acre minimum requirement. And there are no contiguous lots which can be added to Area B, which will bring the area up to at least 100 acres without causing the area to fail the 50% requirement of small lots. However, if the owner of tax lot 5300, which consists of 20.42 acres, which is the bridge between A and B, could be persuaded to give or sell 42 one-hundredths of an acre to the owner of tax lot 5301, we could solve the problem, and then all marginal land in the area could be designated as marginal lands. The Senate has passed a bill and sent it to you in a format where, in some cases, whether or not a person can build a home on his land will be contingent upon whether or not his neighbor, who already has his home, is willing to accept a gift of a fraction of an acre of land. One solution is to amend the bill to provide that marginal land includes land as defined as marginal land by state law, plus such other lands contiguous to marginal land as may be determined by the county governing body as being of similar quality and character. There needs to be some flexibility. I don't believe the legislature is equipped to make land use planning a precise science, yet that is exactly what Senate Bill 237 is trying to do. Please refer to map number 2. This map has a scale of 1 inch equals 400 feet. This square mile is bordered on two sides by Yamhill County, which brings up another interesting question. In determining if an area is qualified marginal land geographic area, may a county consider adjacent lands in another county? Assume that the bill is drafted becomes law and that Washington County designates Area A on map number 2 as a marginal land area. It qualifies. May Yamhill County add small contiguous lots to Washington County's area? After Yamhill County adds some small parcels to the area, can Washington County then add some big ones? Area A on map number 2 consists of 316.87 acres. There are 14 lots of 20 acres or less in size, and one lot is 155 acres. I believe tax lot 214 is unbuilt upon and was says unlawfully, but that's an error. It should be lawfully created during the last 5.5 years. I don't know any parcels that were unlawfully created, and if I did, I wouldn't mention them. So that, believe me, that's a typographical error. Since it's reported to be 20 acres, it is buildable. However, if tax lot 214 turned out to be only 19.9 acres, it would be unbuildable. That brings up another problem with the bill. Assume a parcel of exactly 20 acres is created lawfully and that the meets and bounds description was prepared by a licensed surveyor. However, the tax lot map shows it to be only 19.71 acres since the county tax department does not tax the road that is included in the description. Since it was created after January 1, 1978, it is unbuildable by the tax lot map but buildable by the meets and bounds description. If we are to use the meets and bounds descriptions, the problem of determining marginal land areas by the planners is greatly compounded. This bill in its present form will produce more conflicts and lawsuits and be a full employment bill for lawyers, planners, and consultants. Area B on map number 2, colored green, is also a qualified marginal lands geographic area. This leaves tax lot 203 surrounded on three sides by a marginal land zone and next to Yamhill County on the fourth side. Is it legislative intent to spot zone the remaining tax lot as EFU? When a county creates a zone with a minimum lot size, it generally provides for a variance procedure. Not so with 237. A person with 40 acres can create two 20-acre lots. However, the owner of the southwest quarter of the southwest quarter of Section 27 may contain only 39.8 acres. You know, the earth is round and not all sections are square. Even if he is surrounded by small parcels, he is forbidden by state law to partition. The bill should be amended to allow some type of a variance or lot of exception process. There are many other problems with this bill, including the requirement that the poor soul who gets stuck in the new EFU zone because a lousy tenth of an acre in the wrong place will have to bulldoze some land that should never be cleared and plant the ground to some perennial that may produce $10,000 of gross income in order to get a building permit. What happened to local planning? I urge that you either table this bill or take the time to make it workable. Mr. Chairman, I would request that my two maps be made a part, if it meets with your approval, with the official record of the committee.
Questions of Mr. Allison? Jim, are you going to make more definite recommendations? Because I think we're going to try to work with the bill.
I can, if that's the committee's wish, propose specific recommendations. I would prefer to give them to you philosophically, and if you agree with them, have your expert county council, legislative council, prepare the exact text.
Thank you. Representative Traherne?
Jim, I hope you understand where some of us are concerned, and that is in this marginal land thing. We feel that there is a need for a consideration of marginal land. And like Representative Anderson indicated, I want to make this bill workable, but I think we need the bill. So I would only second what he's suggesting in encouraging you to help us do just exactly that and something that we can all live with.
I'll supply the committee with all of the additional defects that are in the bill. Let me pass just one. I don't know how many of you have ever had experience looking at a U.S. Soil conservation map. But when you get down to talking about administering a law which says it must be predominantly class so-and-so, as of the effective date of this act, boy, those maps are not that accurate when you get down talking around 2 or 3 acres. The lines on the map may be a half an acre wide, and the Soil Conservation Service will tell you that there's a 15% deviation, so there's some real problems. The concept, I can't quarrel with the concept. The language is...
Jim, you've been around this committee process a long time. If you would give us some just written conceptual type things, amendments or whatever.
I will supply you with a list of all the things chronologically through the bill where I think they should be, you should give conscious consideration to it.
Other questions? Thank you, Jim.
Thanks.
I'd like to apologize. We skipped a little protocol here. Representative Agrons was with us, and I just neglected to spot him over there. I'd like to hear from him at this time. Fred Brown has signed up with him, and we'll bring him up together.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I've been working with a group back home who all they had to work on was a copy of the LC draft of the amendments. And so they found that kind of confusing, but I'm hopeful that at your next scheduled meeting on Friday I can present you with some more specific items, and I am assuming that the hearing will still be open next Friday. I would like to call your attention to one item on page 2 on line 10. Well, that whole section, talking about an area of not less than 100 acres composed predominantly of soils and capability classes 5 through 8, agricultural capability classification system, and not capable of producing 85 or more cubic feet of merchantable timber per acre per year. I think that you may already know, but that is a standard that would probably relate to lower quality land over in the valley or over in the Douglas fir region. However, on the east side, 85 cubic feet per acre per year is not a low quality stand. It is probably closer to an average commercial stand. And I would suggest that the committee should consider that, because you will be encompassing a whole bunch of land of a higher site quality than I think you intend. Just to point out to you, I think that the average good land in the ponderosa pine of the east side, probably in a virgin state, has produced on the order of 1 unit or 100 cubic feet per acre per year. Under intensive management, with a lot of intensive management practices, we can get that up to about 150 to 200 cubic feet per acre per year, but that's with massive capital investment, a lot of cultural measures. So when you talk about 85, you're talking about just a shade under what your average good stand is going to produce in the wild state. I think that's a higher standard if you equate that to the lower quality land. I think that you might want to consider, there's another problem that occurs as well. We have land there that may be of an acceptable site quality, but it may not be in a condition that makes that the capturing of that productive capability possible in an economic fashion. In other words, you may have, let's say, some land that's been cut over. It has some residual trees on it, and maybe it has some young reproduction coming along. But it is not producing at your minimum rate, whatever you finally agree on. And in order to make it produce at that minimum rate, you're going to have to load on the order of $200 or more an acre onto it up front to prepare the site and plant trees. And you're going to have to carry that for 50 or 60 years, and it doesn't take much of a calculation to show that's not economically feasible on your lower quality land, and particularly in smaller pieces. So I think that the problem that has been identified could be taken care of if you consider putting the word economically between the words not and capable on that line.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hill. Line 10 on page 2 of the Bee and Gross
Hill
bill.
And Representative
Trigger. Representative Agrins, would it be more feasible to, the original bill, I understand, had 50 cubic feet per acre in it. I know you have quite a bit of experience in forestry in that area. Would you consider 50 cubic feet to be a minimum for an economic measure of productivity?
I think that what you're looking for is something that is below the economic level, and certainly 50 would be better than 85. Now, I'm speaking only of the east side. You get over in the Willamette Valley, and you should get on the order of 200 cubic feet per acre per year in your average stand that's producing well. Okay, a site 3 Douglas fir ought to be producing on the order of 2 units, which would be 200 cubic feet. So I think you need a differentiation between your east side and your west side types here if you're going to talk about productivity in timber. And again, looking for that philosophy that says, where's the breaking off point to where, you have a lower volume of growth that makes it uneconomical simply from the inherent capability of the land to grow. So, yeah, 50 would be better. And then, two, I think, I would reiterate the fact that the land may or may not be in a condition. It's not like a field that you can go out and plow on a piece of agricultural land, but it may not be in a condition that would economically permit you to put the investment in, to put it in whatever its growing capability is, even if it was a good growing site. It might be a brush field that costs a lot of money to convert and get back into timber production.
Representative Hagan.
Representative Agrins, as a forester, I think you're familiar with the fact you referred to it, the idea of site classes for forest land. I'm sure there are a number of different scales. Would it be more logical to pick some kind of a site class for forest land, as the bill does for farmland, and draw some levels at that point rather than worrying about the cubic feet per acre?
The Representative Trahearne, Mr. Chairman, I think that's what they're trying to do. Now, site quality in timber is not usually expressed in that fashion.
Recognize that.
But it's usually expressed in terms of the height that a planted stand will reach in 50 or 60 years, depending on what you're using. So. One of those would certainly be more meaningful to me as a forester. On the other hand, there are site classes that are used in Roman numerical terms, as you have for the agricultural classes that are used over on the pine side. So, again, I think the important thing is that you differentiate between the timber types, those in the valley and on the coast, and those that are east of the Cascades, because they are radically different. And I think that if you like, I would be willing to check with some of my forester friends who are a little closer to the current state of the art and provide you with some suggestions as to how that might be accomplished, given I think I understand what your purpose is.
We'd certainly welcome that.
I'd be glad to do that. I would only conclude by saying that's one thing that we have picked up in our study over on the other side. When my constituent Fred Brown goes home, he's going to carry a package of B. Engrossed bills with him, and they'll get right to work, and I would hope that over the telephone I'll get some more curiosities for you to consider later in the week.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Troop.
I can't help but question that that statement. If he's your constituent, why?
Oh, he's not my constituent. his uncle is my constituent.
Oh, okay. Had me confused there.
They're a big family.
I guess.
Then with that, I'll introduce your constituent, Representative Troop, Fred Brown of Landsville Valley. Fred.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Representative Agrins, as introduced, my name is Fred Brown from Landsville Valley area, Bonanza area, east of Klamath Falls, and perhaps I should be castigated, and maybe soon will be, for not asking Representative Troop to come down here and introduce me, but I did appreciate his coming down and greeting me earlier.
Pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Tom.
Mr. Chairman, may I interrupt for a moment?
Representative Agrins.
The committee may wonder what's going on. It's only fair to tell you that Fred was Tom's opponent in the last election.
I had some business to take care of in Salem and was asked to come up and speak very briefly on behalf of several organizations in Klamath County, including the Klamath County Chamber of Commerce Agriculture Committee, the Organization for Better Legislation to Protect Agriculture, and the Klamath County Republican Women. And the message I was to convey was that each of those groups, at least, wanted to reiterate their concern as to the direction that land use planning was taking in the state of Oregon. They also, however, wanted to convey their best wishes and their appreciation of the fact that there is a difference in the state of land in eastern Oregon, or that east of the Cascades, as opposed and compared to that in the Willamette Valley. The Chamber of Commerce, even today, Agriculture Committee passed a resolution that was unanimous, and I think probably some of you will be receiving a letter to the effect that they will support any efforts that you can make toward giving the landowners in that area as much flexibility in dealing with their so-called marginal lands as possible. And again, we appreciate your efforts in that regard. I just wanted to note, I think you probably have before you a copy of a letter sent from the Klamath County Republican Women, and I, through Representative Agron's office, promised that I'd get that out. And what that is a letter that recites their concerns about land use planning in general, and part of it has to do with this committee and part of it probably doesn't. But again, they're looking for flexibility in dealing with the use of their marginal lands. And then in addition to the signature of the chairman of that committee, there are signatures of a number of people, or the names of a number of people from throughout the county who support the proposition that not only should they be given as much flexibility as possible, but then also that state shared revenues shouldn't be used as a punitive measure for some lack of compliance on the part of local officials in their endeavor to carry out the wishes of flexibility. So, finally, I will just concur with Representative Agron's in noting the fact that I will deliver that material down to the folks in Klamath County and will encourage them to get any specific notes or comments into his office or Representative Troop's office. And I assume we'll have the record open a few more days and that you can consider that material.
Questions,
Mr. Chairman? My understanding was that the chair of the committee was contemplating final action on the bill by the 24th. Is that your understanding, Beth, Andy?
You know, I believe this Friday we were going to start working on issues, and we were hopeful by the next Friday, I believe.
So you probably have about a week to get that material in.
Thank you. We'll do it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jones.
Thank you. I'm going to take the prerogative of the chair today to call in a constituent who's come all the way from my area down in Roseburg, Glide, Oregon, Bill Strader.
Chairman Anderson, members of the committee, my name is William D. Strader. I live on French Creek Ranch in eastern Douglas County, part of Representative Anderson's district. I'm a fifth-generation Douglas County rancher, and as a land-use advocate, I have closely followed the journey of Senate Bill 237 from its conception last winter, as professional farmers and ranchers from all over the state gathered many times to construct this legislation. There are many of us who campaigned hard against Measure 6 who also helped author this bill. We followed both courses of action because, while we have a great need for our statewide system, we recognize we need to establish equity in some areas to provide an even greater mandate of support. Senate Bill 237 was designed to do this. On the one hand, it strengthens the professional agriculturist's right to operate in an area or zone of property conducive to his livelihood. On the other hand, the bill provides relief to certain so-called marginal lands to be carefully identified and selected for rural development. The Senate, in amending the original bill, has strayed from the carefully constructed matrix of criteria in the original proposal. On line one of page two, the phrase significant contribution is exactly the sort of imprecise phrase that would delight the speculators in agricultural lands of Douglas County. All a county landowner would have to do is say a portion of his property is not making a, quote, significant contribution to his operation, and if it is soil class 5 or greater, he could begin to divide off 20-acre lots in the middle of a huge agricultural preserve. No, the original language that only if the land were not part of a farm that grossed $20,000 a year for three of the last 5 years will offer the protection the EFU zones require for stability. Again on line 13, page 2, there is a problem. the forest site index of 85 cubic feet per acre is workable for the Willamette Valley. But much productive forest land in southern as well as eastern Oregon could be lost, since an 85 index is often a viable one, and even lower ones are viable in those areas.
Mr. Chair, is that the ORS site where you get the 85 cubic feet?
That's a site class index, and I think it is not the same as the forest class site, which is like 1 through 5, and there are much lower numbers.
Okay.
It's based on wood production per acre per year.
Are you working off the bee engrossed bill?
I beg your pardon?
Are you working from the bee engrossed bill?
He must have
been. Oh, from the draft?
Okay. Yeah, I'm working from a copy of the same draft you're working on, Representative Parkinson. And, of course, we've had many drafts and many amendments. I have the originals on all the way through, but they're back in my briefcase.
Number 7.
Yeah, all right.
7.
I assume we're working from the same one, but these things change almost daily. And living some distance away, I don't always receive the latest draft.
Sure.